You see it everywhere. The viral spectacle of a woman weeping in her car over a flat tire or a busy day. It looks like genuine distress, but this is not suffering. It is a transaction. This marks the collapse of the independence fantasy. The delusion that autonomy is a fun lifestyle aesthetic rather than a heavy logistical burden. When faced with responsibilities their grandmothers handled before breakfast, they don't solve the problem. They broadcast the breakdown. Today, we expose why this performance is actually a trap, which leads us to the first brutal reality check. The modern narrative sells single life as a perpetual vacation of self-discovery. A woman often leaves a relationship expecting a highlight reel of quiet mornings, aesthetic apartments, and finding herself. She imagines that removing the man removes the oppression, leaving her with endless energy to focus on her own happiness. It is a vision of autonomy that looks like a magazine cover, clean, effortless, and entirely focused on pleasure. Then reality hits with the subtle violence of a leaking pipe at 2 a.m. Suddenly, there is no one to investigate the noise downstairs or negotiate with the mechanic about the car repair. Independence, she discovers, is not about having the bed to yourself. It is about being the only person responsible for the roof over that bed. The silence she craved quickly transforms into the heavy echo of her own logistical limitations. In simpler terms, true independence is not the absence of rules. It is the total ownership of survival. It is the grind of carrying heavy groceries up 3 flights of stairs when you have a high fever. It is the terrifying realization that if you do not execute the task simply does not get done. There is no safety net, no backup generator, and no one to blame but the person in the mirror. Watch what happens when a minor chaotic event occurs, like the internet going down during a work shift. For a functional adult, this is a minor annoyance requiring a phone call. For the unprepared, this is treated as a traumatic event worthy of a mental health crisis. They react to standard administrative friction, the boring machinery of life, as if it were a personal attack by the universe. This is exactly where the burnout complaint originates. They are not physically exhausted from manual labor. They are psychologically depleted by decision fatigue. They never realized that the partner they devalued was actually acting as a cognitive buffer, absorbing the stress of maintaining the infrastructure of their lives. Without that buffer, the sheer weight of existence crushes their romanticized view of freedom. Unable to cope with the boring, unglamorous demands of daily survival, they do not double down and learn new skills to adapt. Instead, they look for an external release valve for this pressure. Since they cannot fix the problem, they decide to market the problem to an audience. This brings us to the mechanism they use to turn their incompetence into social currency. The moment the camera turns on, the emotion ceases to be a reaction and becomes a prop. We see this constantly on your feed. The perfect camera angle, the tears just starting to fall, the caption begging for understanding. It is a calculated performance designed to evoke sympathy from strangers rather than solving the issue at hand. The distress might feel real to her, but the decision to broadcast it transforms it into theater. Ask yourself a simple question. If you were truly devastated, is your first instinct to check your lighting and hit record? Genuine grief instinctively seeks privacy and solitude. Performed grief aggressively seeks an audience. The very presence of the recording proves that the distress is secondary to the desperate desire to be seen in distress. If there is an audience, it is not a crisis. It is a show. This behavior creates a validation loop. In simpler terms, this is an addiction to digital pity. They post the problem, receive thousands of comments saying, "You're doing your best," or "This isn't your fault," and receive a massive dopamine hit. This reinforces the dangerous idea that failing to cope is actually a social success, provided you package it correctly for consumption. they have effectively turned incompetence into a commodity. By framing their inability to handle basic adult logistics as a form of systemic injustice or unique suffering, they monetize their lack of resilience. It is a victim economy where the currency is your attention and the product is their refusal to grow up. They are trading dignity for likes, selling their weakness to the highest bidder. Now, apply the binary contrast principle. Imagine a single father standing on the side of the highway in the rain with a blown engine and two screaming kids in the back. Does he pull out his phone to film himself crying about how unfair the world is or how exhausted he feels? Does he look for validation from strangers? Absolutely not. He changes the tire. He calls a tow truck. He manages the chaos in absolute silence because he knows a brutal truth that men learn early. Nobody is coming to save him. His value to his family is tied strictly to his ability to resolve the crisis, not his ability to complain about the difficulty of the crisis. Society actively encourages this divide. We applaud women for showing vulnerability when they are merely overwhelmed by standard tasks, yet we would mock a man for the exact same display. The market rewards female tears with support, so the market gets them in abundance. They have learned that helplessness pays better than competence. This reliance on public sympathy reveals a total lack of internal fortitude. They are outsourcing their emotional regulation to the internet because they possess no internal structure to hold themselves together. But even millions of likes cannot build a stable home or discipline a child. Which brings us to the critical element that disappears when the man leaves the house. Many women make the critical error of viewing a husband merely as a financial resource or a utility provider. They calculate his value strictly on his paycheck, assuming that if they can earn their own money, his presence becomes redundant. This creates a massive blind spot regarding the psychological architecture of a home. They fail to recognize that he provides the invisible framework that keeps the household from collapsing into emotional anarchy. A masculine presence acts as the necessary container for family life. It represents the unyielding wall against chaos, the enforcement of standards, the finality of no, and the physical security that allows everyone else to relax. Without this boundary, the household atmosphere becomes fluid and reactive. He's not just paying the mortgage, he's enforcing the reality principle that keeps the family grounded. In simpler terms, he's the difference between a suggestion and a rule. While a mother often negotiates with a child's emotions to seek consensus, a father establishes the line that cannot be crossed. This distinction is vital for development. Without that final authority, children live in a state of perpetual negotiation, which breeds anxiety rather than freedom. They need to know exactly where the wall is. When that structure is removed, the home might initially feel freer, but it quickly descends into disorder. We see children effectively ruling the house, ignoring instructions, and treating the mother as a peer rather than an authority figure. The energy shifts from stable and predictable to frantic and loud. The vibe of the home becomes dictated by whoever is screaming the loudest at that moment. For young boys, this vacuum is particularly catastrophic. Without a father to model restraint and channel aggression into purpose, they become unmoored. They act out not because they are inherently broken, but because they are testing the environment to see if anything is strong enough to stop them. When they find only soft emotional appeals, they lose respect for authority entirely. For daughters, the absence of this protective standard leaves a different kind of scar. They grow up without a template for what male strength, protection, and discipline should look like. The father's role is to set the high bar for how men should treat her. Without that bar, she enters the world blind, often mistaking validation for safety. The mother, overwhelmed by this sudden behavioral chaos, often seeks to medicate the problem or blames the child's personality. She fails to see that the behavioral issues are a direct symptom of the structural deficit she created. She's trying to build a skyscraper on a swamp, wondering why it keeps sinking, unaware that she removed the foundation herself. Instead of admitting that the household needs the masculine order she discarded, she views these behavioral problems as just another unfair burden placed upon her. She cannot accept that the chaos is a result of her own management style. This refusal to self-reflect creates an impenetrable shield, which leads us to her complete inability to process criticism. When a crisis inevitably occurs, observe the immediate reflex to point the finger outward. For this personality type, failure is never a result of poor planning or a lack of discipline. It is always framed as bad luck, toxic people, or societal pressure. They possess a psychological allergy to accountability. To suggest that their current situation is a direct result of their past choices is to commit a social heresy. If you attempt to offer a logical solution to their complaints, it is received as an act of aggression. They are not looking for a strategy to fix the issue. They are looking for an accomplice to validate their victimhood. To them, support does not mean helping them improve. It means agreeing that they are helpless bystanders in their own lives. Any constructive criticism is instantly weaponized and labeled as an attack on their character. In simpler terms, they view life as something that happens to them, not something they create. It is the difference between being the driver of a car and a passenger screaming in the back seat. They demanded the keys to the vehicle during the divorce, but the moment they hit a pothole, they claim the road itself is conspiring against them. They want the authority of the captain, but the responsibilities of a child. The most convenient scapegoat for this endless friction is, predictably, the toxic ex. Even years after a separation, every logistical failure is somehow traced back to his influence. If the car breaks down, it is his fault for buying a bad model 5 years ago. If the kids are acting out, it is his bad genetics. He becomes the ghost they use to haunt their own incompetence, absolving them of any need to change. This inability to self-regulate has a devastating effect on the children, leading to a dynamic known as parentification. Because the mother cannot handle the emotional weight of adulthood, she unloads her stress onto her children, treating them like mini-therapists. She complains to them about money, loneliness, and the cruelty of the world, forcing them to stabilize her emotions instead of the other way around. We see a massive accountability gap emerge in real time. This is the vast distance between the autonomy they demanded and the consequences they refuse to own. They fought for the right to make every executive decision in the household, yet they act surprised when they are required to pay the executive costs. They want the title of head of household without the burden of actually leading. Without the ability to accept fault, there is no mechanism for growth. A functional adult analyzes a failure, identifies the error, and adjusts the strategy for next time. These women analyze a failure and adjust the blame. This ensures that they never learn a new skill, never build resilience, and are doomed to repeat the same chaotic loop week after week, forever confused by the outcome. They remain stuck in a state of perpetual astonishment that the world is difficult, waiting for a bailout that never arrives. They believe they are entitled to the traditional protections of a relationship while offering none of the traditional value in return. Which brings us to the impossible trade they attempt to make in the modern dating market. The modern dating market exposes a massive contradiction in their strategy. These women enter the scene demanding a traditional man, one who pays, protects, and provides structure. Yet they simultaneously reject any traditional expectations of loyalty, service, or domestic cooperation. They want the financial privileges of a housewife combined with the absolute social freedom of a bachelor. It is a negotiation where they demand 100% of his utility while offering 0% of their submission. We call this dynamic instrumental intimacy. To them, a man is not a human being with his own emotional needs. He is a utility object designed to solve problems. He is valued strictly for his function, like a high-end appliance or a security system. If he stops producing resources or fixing the chaos she created, his value drops to zero immediately. There is no genuine connection, only a cold calculation of what can be extracted. Watch how they describe their ideal partner on social media. The list is entirely composed of service requirements. Must make six figures. Must be generous. Must love my kids. There is rarely any mention of what they bring to the table to deserve such a man. They believe their mere presence is a sufficient gift that justifies his labor. They are looking for an employee to manage their life, but they want him to pay for the privilege of being hired. In simpler terms, they want a bodyguard who pays the rent, but they want to live with the autonomy of a single teenager. They want him to kill the spider and finance the vacation. But if he asks for a sandwich or peace and quiet, he is called controlling. It is the definition of a bad business deal. They are selling a liability, their chaotic, debt-ridden life, and asking a premium price for it. This approach reveals that they are not looking for love, they are looking for a rescue mission. They are drowning in the logistical mess of their own independence and need a man to act as a life raft. The date is not an interview for a wife. It is a desperate search for a contractor to fix the roof that she let collapse. Men instinctively feel this pressure to perform, and it instantly repels them. A high-value man can smell this transactional desperation from a mile away. He knows the difference between a woman who desires him and a woman who desires help. When he realizes he is being interviewed for the position of ATM and handyman, he walks away. He did not work hard to build his empire just to bail out a woman who squandered hers. He wants a partner who adds value, not a dependent who drains it. The tragic irony is that the very independence they bragged about makes them unfit for the partnership they now crave. They have spent years practicing selfishness, unlearning the art of compromise and service. They arrive at the table with baggage, emotional debt and demands, shocked that quality men are choosing younger, less complicated options. The market is ruthless, and their value has plummeted. They are left shouting at the market, demanding that men step up, without realizing that men have simply stepped aside. They price themselves out of the game by offering a terrible product. The demand for a real man is ignored because real men do not sign bad contracts. This leaves them facing the cold, hard truth that no amount of crying can change, which leads us to the final, irreversible verdict of nature. In the end, reality acts as the ultimate judge, and it is completely indifferent to your tears. The universe does not care about your viral video, your victim narrative, or how empowered you claim to be. Gravity pulls the same way whether you are happy or sad, and bills remain due regardless of your emotional state. The world operates on cold, hard logistics, not on feelings or social media engagement. We are witnessing a generation colliding with the concrete wall of cause and effect. They spent years believing they could suspend the laws of social physics, that they could dismantle the family unit without consequences. Now they are standing in the ruins of that decision. The freedom they purchased came with a hidden tax of profound isolation that they can no longer afford to pay. This is nothing less than social natural selection in real time. Nature has a ruthless way of filtering out behaviors that are functionally useless. Women who refuse to adapt, who refuse to bring value, and who rely on manipulation instead of competence will simply be left behind. They are effectively selecting themselves out of the gene pool and out of the relationship market. For men, the strategy is not to argue, but to observe and step back. You cannot save someone who is committed to drowning. Any attempt to intervene or fix their mess only enables their delusion for another week. Let the consequences of their own autonomy be the teacher they finally listen to. You are not the safety net. You are the spectator. In simpler terms, if you demand the crown, you must wear the heavy head that comes with it. True independence is the quiet dignity of solving your own problems without an audience. If you need to broadcast your struggle to feel valid, you were never independent to begin with. You were just unsupervised. The era of the helpless boss babe is closing. The crying videos will continue, but the sympathy is drying up. The world is returning to a baseline of merit and reality. They can either learn to swim in the deep end they chose to jump into, or they can sink under the weight of their own ego. The choice is theirs, but the outcome is inevitable. Natural selection doesn't care about your feelings. If this diagnosis cut through the noise, confirming the pattern you've always sensed, you know what to do next. Join us as we keep dismantling the illusions of modern relationships. Question for you. Do you believe this behavior is reversible, or is the damage permanent? Drop your thought below. I read every reply.